You are listening to The Wellness Project. I'm your host, Des, and this is episode number 131. I would greatly appreciate it if you would head over to iTunes and Spotify and leave me a review. It helps my podcast to grow, which in turn will help more people with their mental health. Thank you so much for being here with me today. On today's episode, I speak with Noelle McWard. I'm super excited about today's episode because Noelle is a therapist and group practice owner in Chicago, and she specializes in anxiety. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, or you follow me on social media, you're probably aware that I struggle with anxiety. I have a generalized anxiety disorder, and it does interfere in my daily life. I've tried a lot of different things for my anxiety. Unfortunately, I haven't found anything that helps super well. Some days it's maintained, some days it's not, some days it gets away from me and interferes in my life a great deal. I know a lot of people struggle with anxiety, so if that is you, then you are really going to find a lot of value out of this episode. Help me welcome Noelle. Hi, Noelle. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Desiree. It's great to be here.
I'm really looking forward to our conversation today because we are going to be talking about all things anxiety, and I know you're very passionate about that. So I'm thinking this is going to be a great conversation. So I would love if you could start us out with introducing who you are, what you do, how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Thank you. My name is Noelle McWard. I am a therapist who practices in Chicago, and I've been a therapist for 30 years now. And anxiety is something that has been almost a specialty of mine since the very beginning of my career, or maybe I should better say that from the beginning of my career 30 years ago, was something that I was really interested in working with people with anxiety and really interested in trying to figure out how to better help people with anxiety. I found myself when I started out practicing that the things that I had learned, while helpful, didn't feel sufficient enough to help me help people sufficiently with anxiety. And so it became something that really became an area of specialty and something that I searched out a lot of training in, and then became a mother to two children. And one of my children, my youngest, who's now 22 years old, has struggled with pretty significant anxiety and obsessive compulsive disorder for most of his life. So it's something that I've lived with somebody who really struggles with anxiety and has seen up close really how painful and difficult it can be for people who are suffering from it. So something that was a professional interest of mine became very much a personal interest as well. And I have over the years developed my own way of thinking about and treating anxiety, which I use in my work with clients and which I teach to therapists now. I'm in the process of writing a book about for people who struggle with anxiety. So in a nutshell, that is the short answer to what I do and sort of what my journey has been in wanting to really help people with anxiety and give them new tools and new ways of understanding their anxiety.
Oh, great. And from the very beginning, you had this strong interest in anxiety. Where do you think that interest and passion came from?
You know, I've often wondered about that. And it's hard to say because it really is the thing that I was most interested in working with when I started treating people. You know, people would come to therapy with all kinds of issues. And really from the beginning of my career, anxiety was the thing that I was most interested in working with. And it's not because I suffer from anxiety myself any more than just being a human being. And we all do experience anxiety from time to time. I sometimes look back now and wonder if the interest was in some way preparing me to become my son's mother, because I've often wondered about that, why it became something that was such an interest to me. Beyond seeing that people really do struggle with it, and it is something that affects so many people and that can really make life feel very challenging for many people.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I am somebody that struggles with anxiety. I have a generalized anxiety disorder, which I struggle with a lot. So I was really looking forward to chatting with you today.
Yes.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you for sharing all of that. I love that you have this passion and this strong interest in anxiety, because you're right, we all have a certain level of anxiety, but some of us
Yes.
struggle more so than others. So for our listeners, how do you define anxiety?
There's a couple of things about it. I mean, anxiety, if we sort of just define what it is a state of excessive worry or fear. There are certain things, so that I like to explain to people about anxiety. I mean, first one being that we all do experience anxiety, and we are all wired to have anxiety as part of our survival mechanism and part of the way that we seek to keep ourselves safe. And it does serve a very useful purpose when we are in situations where we're in danger. So for all of us, we have like the primitive part of our brain. There's a cluster of cells at the stem of our brain called the amygdala, and its only job is to look for danger. And when it finds danger, it releases chemicals into and hormones into our system, and it triggers a response that many of us know as the fight, flight, or freeze response. So we have a part of our brain that is looking for danger at all times, and when it finds it, we have a physiological response that happens then that is all designed to keep us safe and protect us from that danger. So we have epinephrine that gets released into our bloodstream, which turns into adrenaline. And that adrenaline, it makes our heart rates increase, and it makes our breathing more shallow. Hormones get released into our digestive tract. So many people, when they feel anxiety, they feel it in their stomach. That's because of things that are happening in our digestive tract. And the whole purpose of like that increased heart rate and the shallow breathing is to send blood and oxygen to our extremities to prepare us to either fight or flee. So it's to prepare our body to protect ourselves. And the system that works really well for us if we really are in danger does have one significant flaw, which is that it cannot tell the difference between a danger that's real and one that our mind perceives to be there. So as long as our mind perceives there to be a danger, our body is going to respond in the way that it was designed to do. And for most of us who experience anxiety, and for people who experience chronic anxiety, their minds have habitual ways of perceiving danger that isn't real, and that is what is causing our anxiety. I've been working with clients, and in the model that I've sort of developed for myself and that I now teach to therapists, when I was working with clients who were presenting with anxiety, I started to notice patterns in those clients. So even though every single person was different, their life circumstances were different, the details of their anxiety was different, I started to notice that there were these patterns in how their anxiety was presenting. And I started to think of it as there being three different, what I would call root causes or categories of anxiety. So that over time, no matter how the anxiety was presenting, I could always trace it back to originating from one of these three root causes of anxiety. And each of those three root causes has very distinct and unique characteristics. So each one is different. Each one has like very clear qualities to them that are different from the others. And even though one can influence the other, they're all distinct and separate. And they all have their own solution, which is a lot of what I work with clients about, understanding what those three causes of anxiety are, what the solutions are for each of the three, and also to understand that each of the three has its own, what I call objection, which is the way that the anxiety will fight to preserve itself when it's challenged. So I think of those three root causes as those habitual patterns or ways that we get into habits of seeing danger that doesn't actually exist.
Oh, great. Yeah. And if you feel comfortable, I would love to get into that model you developed, and you could
Sure.
share as much or as little as you feel comfortable with. But those patterns that you're seeing, those three root causes, the objections, any solutions, anything you feel comfortable sharing would be amazing.
Yeah, definitely. The three root causes or the three categories of anxiety are catastrophizing, control, and distorted belief. And I can sort of explain what each one is and what each one looks like. So catastrophizing or future catastrophizing is when you're in a situation and you have a certain You have certain facts or certain information available to you. And from what you know to be true, you make up a story about something terrible that's going to happen in the future. So, examples of people who catastrophize. One of my clients told a story of, bending over, and when she stood up, hitting her head on the table, and she said it hurt, but it didn't hit it that hard. But immediately her mind went to, oh no, what if you have a concussion and you go home and you live by yourself? And what if you pass out in the middle of the night and you die from having a concussion? If somebody gets a headache and they immediately go to, what if I have a brain tumor or it's cancer? A client who, if her boss would speak to her in a sharp tone or was impatient, would immediately become convinced that she was going to be fired and would call her wife and say, I'm going to get fired, even though she had never been given any feedback from her boss that she was displeased with her job performance or that there was, any cause for her to be concerned about her job. So the catastrophizing is when we make up stories about something terrible that's going to happen in the future. And then we relate to that story as if it's what is going to happen, what's likely to happen, or what is happening. And catastrophizing is pretty easy to spot because it almost always begins with the words, what if? And everything that follows what if is a story that our minds is making up. For people who do catastrophizing as their main form of anxiety, this is the person who looks like the anxious worrier. This is what we tend to think of as anxiety looking like, and it does show up as, the person who has an anxious energy about them, has a tendency to worry about things, and the worries are usually those what if stories. So, with catastrophizing, the solution to catastrophizing is to work on differentiating between what I actually know to be true, what are the facts, and what's the story that I'm making up. We have to learn how to be with what is rather than what if. And using a lot of techniques like mindfulness, grounding, really helping us bring ourselves into the present moment and really focusing only on what I know to be true and not the stories that I'm making up is how we work with catastrophizing. And then the objection to catastrophizing, the way that it tries to preserve itself, is when it's challenged, it will fight back with it could happen. So no matter, how unlikely the scenario is that the mind is creating, it kind of clings to the possibility that, but this could happen. So that one is catastrophizing. The second one is control. And control is more complicated, a little more nuanced than catastrophizing. And the first thing about control is that, for all of us in any situation that we're in, there's always going to be certain things about the situation that are in our control, and there will always be things that are not in our control. Things that are in our control are what I think, how I choose to react to a situation, how I behave. Those are things that are in our control. Things that are not in our control are what somebody else thinks, what somebody else feels, how somebody else behaves. There can be things like acts of nature that are outside of our control. So we're always going to have, in any situation, things that are in our control and things that are not. And for some people, when they overattend to the things that are not in their control and put more of their mental, physical, and emotional energy into trying to control the things that are not in their control, that often creates anxiety. It puts people in the position of feeling either powerless or victimized. And all the energy that we put into focusing on the things that are not in our control is energy that we're not putting into things that are in our control. So it's energy that's not being focused on what we actually have the power to change and influence and control. And when we can shift our attention to that, to placing our attention on what is in our control, that's where we feel more empowered. That's where we have more resilience. So on a really basic level, that is a big part of control. But there's another aspect of it which is very common in anxiety. And I sort of like to start out with this idea that at the baseline, that there are some people who at their baseline feel like either I'm not okay or things are not going to be okay. And when that's sort of the baseline feeling state or belief, I'm not okay or things are not going to be okay, then people develop strategies to try to help them feel like I will be okay, to help them compensate for that. And there's usually two ways that people do that. The first one is to try to control as much of their external environment as they possibly can. So the unconscious thinking behind that is often, if I know what to expect, or if things happen the way that I think that they should, or that I want them to, then I'll be okay. So it becomes the condition of I'm going to be okay is dependent on what happens outside of me. And if things happen the way that I want them to, that I think that they should, that's what's going to make me be okay. So for some people, they expend a lot of energy trying to control their environment in order to create that sense of it's going to be okay or I'm going to be okay. The other thing that people do is they try to anticipate everything that could possibly go wrong and make a plan for what they will do if those things happen. So this involves catastrophizing because they do the catastrophizing with thinking of all the things that could go wrong, but then they take it a step further and create plans for what they will do if those things happen. For people who do this, first of all, it's exhausting. Anybody who is used to doing that will tell you that it is exhausting to constantly be thinking about the things that could go wrong and making plans for what they're going to do. As much as there's a way in which one can understand why one would think these strategies work, neither of these strategies actually work. Controlling our environment is never going to work because going back to that first principle that there's always going to be things that are outside of our control. We will never be successful at controlling everything in our environment, no matter how hard we try. And the problem with using that as a strategy is that we're also completely externalizing the conditions under which we can be okay. And we make it dependent on what's happening outside of us. And what we really want to be able to do is move, that sense of I can be okay to internal. We shift it from I'm okay only based on what happens outside of me to shifting it to I'm going to be okay because I'm the one who's here to make sure that whatever happens, I will figure it out and I will find a way to be okay. So being able to rely on our own internal resources and strengths and abilities, as well as external resources that we may have available to help us when we do encounter problems, which we all will. So the control doesn't work as an attempt to be okay. And the imagining everything that could go wrong and creating a plan for what you will do doesn't work because simply none of us are fortune tellers and have the ability to know what's going to happen in the future. Any plan that we make for any problem that we, conceive of won't work because we'll never be able to accurately predict the things that go wrong or the details of the circumstances when things go wrong. We can count on things going wrong. Problems arise, things happen, things do go wrong. And when they do, we all have to figure out what we're going to do based on the facts and the information available to us in that moment. So we do have to rely on really ourselves and, again, our internal and external resources to problem solve when problems arise. And we're never going to be able to predict that with enough detail in advance to be useful. So it's a strategy that many people think is helpful, but it actually is not. And one of the ways that I like to sort of illustrate that to people is by, asking them, when you think about all the plans that you've made over the years and all the problems that you've imagined would happen, how many times did those things that you planned for actually happen and you use those plans? And people, the answer is always never or virtually never. And then if I ask, when you think about all the really worst and most challenging things that have happened to you, how many of those things had you planned for in advance and anticipated would happen? And again, the answer to that question is virtually always never or almost never. For people who have anxiety that comes from control, this tends to look more like people who are highly effective, highly capable, over-functioners who feel very stressed, maybe have very rigid expectations about how things should be done, rigid ideas about a right way to do things, versus everything else, which is the wrong way. the solution to anxiety stemming from control is to really work on cultivating that internal sense of trust, and really being able to recognize all of the strengths and abilities and capabilities and resources that I have available to me that I can rely on, so that there's a sense that the reason why things are okay is because of me, not because of these coping strategies that I use. And the objection that is raised by control is the belief that these strategies are the reason why I'm successful. For people who have anxiety stemming from control, they genuinely across the board are highly capable, highly successful, and highly effective people. And they are very convinced that it is these anxiety behaviors that are the reason that they are successful. What I always tell people, and that they rarely believe when I first tell them, but I've never found this to not be true, is that you can lose the anxiety and keep all of the capability. That it truly is you that is the reason that you are successful, and you get to keep all of the things about you that make you successful, and you can do that without the anxiety. And then the very last one is distorted belief. And distorted belief is having a belief about ourselves. And it's when we talk about distorted belief and anxiety, it usually is a belief that we hold about ourselves that we believe is true, that in fact is not true. And for people who have anxiety, those distorted beliefs are negatively distorted beliefs. So it is believing something negative about myself to be true that is not actually true. Examples of that could be I'm a failure, I'm unlovable, I'm broken, I'm incapable. And when we have a false negative belief about ourselves, it affects the way that we feel. So it creates anxiety. And we often see in people who have anxiety that comes from distorted belief, we also see some depression because the negative beliefs also cause feelings of depression. And we develop behaviors because of the belief that we hold about ourselves. So whenever we have a negatively distorted belief, we will develop behaviors and ways of being in the world that are a way of trying to compensate for or hide from the rest of the world this thing that we believe to be true. So, an example that I can give of that is if somebody believes that they are fundamentally unlovable, they may engage in relationships in ways where they are people pleasers, where they say yes to any request that is made of them by others, even if they don't want to say yes or it would cause stress for them to say yes. They may offer to do things for people even before they're asked to do it. And it comes from this belief that, if I'm unlovable or I lack value, why would you want to be in relationship with me? So the way that I will make you want to be in relationship with me is by doing everything that you want to do or by offering to help. And by offering to do things for you. And at the same time, that same person would likely be very reluctant to ask for anything that they might need or want. So there's always behaviors that go along with distorted beliefs. When we're working on anxiety that comes from distorted beliefs, we are really working on identifying what those distorted beliefs are, understanding that by definition, they are not true, which means that something else is true. So we work on identifying and figuring out, well, what is actually true? Understanding what behaviors we engage in because of the belief that we hold, and then working to change those behaviors so that they line up with the corrected belief that is actually true. The objection that is raised by distorted belief is that when someone really holds a belief about themselves to be true and are really attached to it. Again, by definition, if it's false, it means that inevitably they are going to receive feedback and objective evidence from the world around them that tells them what actually is true about them, that will tell them, how others see them, which is different from how they're seeing themselves. The objection is ways in which the mind deflects diminishes, invalidates that evidence and that feedback that comes to us from the rest of the world that would force us to change the way that we see ourselves. So, ways that one might do that is if you get a compliment from someone, you might say, oh, well, they're just saying that to be nice, or they say that to everyone. Or if there is a certain skill or trait or ability that one gets complimented on often, they may dismiss it by saying, well, that's easy. That doesn't really, that's nothing. That's easy to do when it may be easy for that person, but not easy for everybody else. So the objection for distorted belief is really the ways in which people become very adept at keeping any other information that tells them something different about themselves at a distance by really deflecting and invalidating, feedback that they get from the rest of the world. So that was a whole lot that I just gave you.
Yeah, no, it was all amazing. Oh my gosh, I could listen to you talk about this forever. Thank you so much for sharing all of this. So, my question is, do you ever see people that struggle with all three? Because all of this was kind
Yes.
of resonating with me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So when I developed this model, it was something that I developed just for myself, and really where it came from, and this will be to answer your question, really where it came from was I was doing all kinds of training on different, models and theories and interventions and strategies for working with anxiety. And I was getting so much information that I was trying to organize it all for myself in a way that I would feel like I would know what to use for each client, depending on what they were presenting with. And then I, at the same time, I was also noticing these patterns, as I mentioned. And once this model sort of took hold for me, at some point in my work, I decided to start sharing it with clients. So every time I work with a client who presents with anxiety, I will tell them, and I often do this in my first session with them, I will tell them, let me tell you a little bit about how I think about anxiety and how I work with it. And I give them the model and I give them a version of what I just shared with you. And I say, listen for what resonates. You may, some things will resonate and some things won't. And, afterwards, I would love to hear your thoughts. And what happens 100% of the time is that when I give people the model, they can tell me where their anxiety comes from. They can identify it right away. And some people will say, I do one of those, but not the other two. Some people will say, I do two of those, but not the third. And some people say, I do all three. So absolutely, this can manifest in any combination of those three for people. And when people hear it, they are usually very quickly able to identify which ones they know resonate for them, and that they tend to, it's like what their favorites are, as I would say.
Yeah, I can see why the model makes a lot of sense to me and is very thorough. So, you had mentioned before that you know of some treatments for anxiety that don't really work. So can you share some that maybe are recommended by people or that you're seeing are used by therapists to treat people with anxiety that you personally don't feel are really effective?
I would say it a little bit differently. I think they all work. I mean, so I've done training in all kinds of things, and I think that every, whether, and this is sort of therapy lingo now, but whether it is psychodynamic theory or cognitive behavioral therapy theory, or if it is mindfulness or acceptance and commitment therapy, DBT, I mean, there are all kinds of things out there available to us as therapists to treat people with anxiety. And they all work. They all have something to contribute. What I found was that there wasn't any one thing that was the one thing that worked. For instance, my background was in psychodynamic theory. That's what I was taught in graduate school. And I think the reason that I started seeking out other training on how to work with anxiety was because when I started working with clients and I only had psychodynamic theory as in my toolbox, what I found was that I didn't know how to help people who were in distress right now to start feeling better right now. And so I started looking for other ways that I could work with anxiety that would address more of the here and now distress that people were in. And the first thing that I learned was cognitive behavioral therapy, which is widely used in the treatment of anxiety and is very effective and is often sort of touted as the best thing to do for treating anxiety. And when I first learned CBT, I was really excited. I felt like this is it. This is what I was missing. This is the answer. And it did help a lot. It did make my work with clients with anxiety better. But after I was working with CBT for a while, I realized that it had its limitations as well. If I would say that psychodynamic is deep but not practical enough, I would say CBT is practical but not deep enough. Every different modality that I've learned, mindfulness is really useful and, has its place. But for example, mindfulness works better with people's whose anxiety stems from catastrophizing than it does for people whose anxiety stems from control. And so it really just became that every different approach out there has something to offer. And some of them work better with different types of anxiety, depending on from which of the three root causes of anxiety it's coming from. So for me, that was sort of how, when I was like trying to figure out what works best, it wasn't that any of them didn't work. It's just that not there isn't one that is the answer all the time.
Right, gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, great. A lot of people struggle with anxiety. What are some ways that you see that people with higher level of anxiety or more severe cases of anxiety, what are ways that you are seeing this impact a person's everyday life?
Oh my gosh, in so many ways. And I really get to, as I said, I've been able to see that up close with my son. So if I start with him, what I would see on an almost daily basis would be high levels of distress, really sort of feeling completely overwhelmed and meltdowns and, really feeling this sense of intense fear. That's something for my son, his anxiety is largely catastrophizing. So for him, what I see, and maybe I can speak about this for each of the different categories. So for people who catastrophize, it's really hard to find a moment of peace within themselves. There's sort of that constant, the monkey mind, the constant mind that is running from one potential problem to the next, and is always seeing problems, is always seeing catastrophe. And with that comes all the physiological feelings that we have when we have anxiety. So, there's the heart racing and the shallow breathing and not being able to concentrate, but also just that intense discomfort that you feel when you're constantly seeing problems and things to worry about. It's really quite painful for people who are severely affected by it and who, can rarely get a moment's peace from it. So for catastrophizing, it looks more like that. For people whose anxiety stems from control and have like more severe anxiety in that way, they look highly stressed, and would describe themselves as being very stressed. And I describe them as being people who feel like they have to hold the world up, that they alone are holding up the sky, and if they just stop and relax for a moment, then everything's going to come crashing down. So for people whose anxiety comes from control and it is pretty severe, it is extremely difficult for them to relax, and they feel incredibly responsible and that they have to do it all, and it's all on them. And that can be painful. And then for people where, it comes from distorted belief, as I said, that one, what accompanies that often is depression. So in addition to anxiety, you can also see a lot of depression. And, with all of them, you can see a lot of avoidance, but with distorted belief, there in particular can be a lot of avoidance of just engaging in aspects of life that you might enjoy, but that you avoid because of some belief that you hold about yourself that says I'm not capable or people would judge me or whatever that belief would be.
Okay, great. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. Noelle, this has been so amazing, so informative, so valuable. I resonated with so much of this. Do you have any last words of wisdom or advice for our listeners that struggle with anxiety?
I would say that first of all, they are not alone. Anxiety is the most commonly, it's the number one most diagnosed mental health disorder in this country. And that was before the pandemic, and it has only grown exponentially since the pandemic. So, the two things that I would say to people who are struggling with anxiety is one, you are not alone. It is so common. There are so many people who struggle with it, and there is help that you can get for it also. And there are a lot of different approaches and a lot of different resources for getting help. As a therapist, I'm a big fan of therapy, but I just really do want people to know you don't have to suffer with this forever and that it can get better.
Oh, great. I fully agree. Noelle, can you share where everyone can find you? Can you tell us a little bit about your book, if you have any available trainings online or anything?
The people can find me. My email is noelle@counselingsolutionschicago.com. My website is counselingsolutionschicago.com, and I do have a PDF that people, it's a little guide that talks about the three root causes of anxiety and sort of explains what I talked about in our conversation today that people can access for free. By going to my website, I'm in the process of writing a book, and I do see that the end is in sight. I'm hoping to have that out and published. It won't be this year, but in 2024. At the moment, I do not have online trainings that are available, but if people are interested in that, if they do get that PDF with the three root causes of anxiety, I will have their email address. And as trainings become available for people who are struggling with anxiety, they would be notified of those.
Perfect. Everyone, I'm going to have all those links in the show notes. Noelle, please let us know when your book is out and published, and I will add that to the show notes. Noelle, thank you
Thank
so
you.
much for being here today.
Thank you. It was wonderful being here. Thank you.
Noelle, thank you so much for being here today and sharing your passion, sharing your expertise. I appreciate it so much. I resonated with so much of what you talked about today, and I know a lot of our listeners probably do as well. Everyone, as I said, go check out Noelle. All of her links are in my show notes. Every episode of The Wellness Project has its own specific page full of the detailed show notes and all of the links. You could find today's episode at accordingtodez.com/131. If you liked this episode, please share it and tag me on social media at The Wellness Project with Dez. I would love it if you became a part of my Facebook community. I'm in there almost every single day with mental health content. That is facebook.com/groups/accordingtodez. If you sign up for my email list, you will get your free weekly wellness checklist, which you can download and print week after week. And you will stay up to date with all things going on, blogs, new podcast episodes, new offerings. And make sure you're following me on Instagram at The Wellness Project with Dez. Again, you will find all of those links in the show notes. Thank you so much for being here. I will see you in 2 weeks with another amazing guest. Talk to you then.